Bob Harris Country on Radio 2, and my very special session guest tonight is one of the best loved and most respected figures in country music, Emmylou Harris. Emmylou's album Hard Bargain is the latest release in a career which has spanned more than 40 years so far, and the opening track, The Road, pays tribute to her early partnership with alt country pioneer Gram Parsons. Emmylou came into the studio when she was in London just recently and started the session with a solo performance of that song.
I can still remember every song you played long ago when we were younger and we rocked the night away. How could I see a future then where you would not grow with such a fire in our belly, such a hunger in our soul? I guess I probably loved you when those words rolled off your tongue. It seemed that we were traveling under some old lucky sun. I know I couldn't save you, no one was to blame. But the road we shared together once will never be the same. Hey, coming round a day. Hey, hey, with a song I pray, and on the wings of a song I fly away. I wandered in the wilderness for a while. I was so lost. To everything there is a season, and every blessing has its cost. I took what you left me, put it to some use. I'm looking for an answer with those three chords and the truth. I come down from the mountain, I come walking in your shoes. I was taken for a gambler when I had no more to lose. For you put me on that path. How could I refuse? And I have spent my whole life out here working on the blues. Hey, 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 hey. Be haunted by the past. People come and people go, and nothing ever lasts. I still think about you, wonder where you are. Can you see me from someplace up there among the stars? But down here, guide our way across this crooked highway of the heart. And if it's only all about the journey in the end, on that road I'm glad I came to know you, my old friend. Emmylou Harris.
Harris is with us here on Bob Harris Country Today. And The Road is the opening song from Emmy's new album, Hard Bargain. What a lovely song it is, too. I mean, this is very reflective, isn't it, of a time gone by?
Yes, very much. I think as older you get, you don't spend a lot of time looking back, but once in a while you do.
Yeah. And it's a song written about Graham.
About Graham.
Yeah.
And that meeting with him that really changed my life. You know, it's hard for me to imagine all that has come my way, all the bounty and the wonderful things and the direction that my life has taken without that chance meeting with him. So I don't know how many people have that experience of that. They can say it's almost like a comet striking the earth and the surface is changed forever. And I think, I don't think I'm really over-exaggerating to say that that's the effect that he had on my life.
Yes. Do you think back now and think how you were thinking then? In other words, sort of aspirations and matching what you thought might happen with the reality of what actually has.
Well, first of all, you know, I started out wanting to be Joan Baez, and by the time I got to the grand old age of 24, 25, or however I was when I met Graham, I had was still working in clubs and knocking around as a folk singer. I don't think I'd really found my own voice. I was supporting a daughter. I was a single mother. And I had a lot of help from my parents, but basically I was a bit rudderless. Still played music, but I think the idea of anything actually really happening for me, you know, I don't think I was very hopeful at that point, and possibly a little bit cynical, I don't know, but I was just busy trying to make a living doing the one thing I knew, which was playing in the clubs and just building a repertoire and singing every night. And the fact that Graham stumbled into my life and offered me a job, I still really just thought, I didn't really think anything was going to come of it, or I didn't understand his music. I didn't really like country music that much. I didn't have a love of it that I came to have from working with him and that world that he opened up for me. So it was a real sea change.
Yes. And writing, you know, the way you write, I mean, and perhaps the way that compares nowadays with the way that you were writing in those days. In a way, you're almost an accidental writer, aren't you? In the sense that you like, it's not like work. I get the impression that you don't like to think to yourself, I'm going to sit down now and write a song.
Oh, I don't like to think that at all, Bob.
Exactly. You know, that ideas come in, almost in a sort of random way, and then you respond to things that are going on.
Well, once you get an idea, you kind of collect them. You know, if you think, one day I might sit down and write, this is an idea. But I think you have to just look on it like a job. You have to get up in the morning and say, right, I'm going to work. And that's the way I write when I set aside time to write. Mm. And then once you get started, sometimes you're driving down the road and you get an idea. And so that's when it's good to have a little recorder and hope that you don't forget it by the time you get home.
The approach to this album appears to me to be fairly spontaneous this time, Emmy. I mean, it was recorded in a relatively short period of time as well, wasn't it? You recorded it across, what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah.
This time?
Well, it's true. It was spontaneous, and I mean, we didn't have to labor over any of the tracks, but, you know, I had done my homework in writing, and Jay Joyce, the producer, was, you know, he was well acquainted with the material. When I had my first bunch of songs, I played him, and then as I would get something else, I would play it for him. And in the meantime, we were looking for other songs to cover, and we pretty much just settled on the two, which is Hard Bargain and his song, Cross Yourself. And I think probably he was doing a lot of work on the front end of thinking about how to arrange the songs. For example, the song I just did, that's the way it was written, as like a folk song in an open tuning. But Jay said, you know, I really think that this could have real power, you know, to sort of put a really strong beat behind it. And at first I thought, oh, you can't do that to my little precious folk song. But I tend to trust my producers. You know, I feel like if you're going to have a producer, you might as well let him produce and come up with ideas. And he said, you know, you won't have to phrase it or sing it any differently. And I realized once we got going that the song still remained intact. The emotional center of the song still remained intact, but it got this whole other power from the way he visualized it.
Because this is a sort of tight, collaborative unit this time, isn't it? It's yourself.
Three people.
Jay Joyce and Giles Reeves, yes. So then in terms of, as it were, working the songs up and developing these ideas, how did that dynamic between all of you work?
Well, I don't know. We just, you know, we had the key, and I was playing guitar on all but two songs. And usually we had a click track, and then Giles would overdub something maybe a little more interesting and varied. But we would always have our click to work with, which I really love a click. You know, it gives you all kinds of possibilities later on. And Giles would either play vibes, or he would play piano, or in one song, he actually strummed the strings of a grand piano, which made it sound like a big dulcimer. And Jay plays every possible kind of guitar. He even has an electric banjo that we used on a couple of things, a slide guitar, and bass, you know. He plays a wonderful bass. So usually that was overdubbed. But we would have a vocal and a groove and a feel that was the basic bones that we could build on, so that then they could decide on what kind of layering, what kind of instruments, and build it up at that point. And the other thing was, I always assume I'm going to have people come in and sing on the record, but Jay had said, well, part of what you do is sing harmony, and let's at least start by having you, you know, put some harmonies down, and if we feel like something is lacking and we feel like we need another voice, then we can do that. But as we went on, it seemed like there was something about respecting the simplicity and the small group that we were.
Yeah.
Let's be self-contained. Why not? Mm. So we literally brought no one else in.
Yeah. I want to talk a little more about the, you know, the topics covered by some of the songs. But before we do that, if you could play us another song from the record itself. And Big Black Dog. I mean, we'll talk about all of this after we've heard it, but
all right.
It's Emmylou Harris with all us right. Here in the studio.
Okay. A big black dog, a little too much gray around the muzzle. A big black dog, why she ended up at the pound is a puzzle. A big black dog. Did she run away because somebody didn't treat her right? Did they leave her out in the cold, not after lonely night? My big black dog. A big black dog. Found her one day down there at the metro. A big black dog, waiting in a cage in line for the death row. A big black dog. Did somebody put her out on the road? Did they just not care? Did they think an old dog was too much trouble for them? A big black dog. Her name is Bella, Bella. You're not brown and you're not yellow, Bella, Bella, my big black dog. Big black dogs, they're everywhere, looking for a home. Hungry and scared, all they need is food and attention. They give you back love, sometimes redemption. I swear you could find it there in a big black dog. A big black dog. She may be a little rough around the edges. Big black dog. But when you throw a ball, she'll always go and fetch it. A big black dog. With a brand new leash and a brand new collar, it's a brand new game. I love to see the way she runs to me when I holler at her. my big black dog. Her name is Bella, Bella. You're not brown, you're not yellow, Bella, Bella, my big black dog. My big black dog.
You know, one of the things I love so much about that song is when you're singing Bella, it's like you're calling her.
Yeah, well,
isn't
that's
it? Yeah.
And I call her, she comes too. She comes right to you.
Because the first time I came to Nashville and we visited you at your house,
oh, right.
And, you know, when we were chatting, I had your cat on my lap, purring in the background. You could clearly hear it when we put the interview out on Radio 2 a few weeks later. And of course, I think of you as loving animals, being surrounded by animals. But tell us the significance of Big Black Dog and what this song actually represents.
About 6.5 years ago, I started a dog rescue in my yard, taking dogs from Nashville Humane, which is where Bonaparte, my dog, that traveled with me for 10 years, and we named the dog rescue Bonaparte's Retreat after he died in 2002. So in 2004, I started this dog rescue in my backyard. We were fostering dogs from Nashville Humane, which is a low-kill shelter, only dogs that are very ill or maybe a temperament that can't be changed so that they can be in a home. But then I started thinking about the dogs that were at what we call Metro Animal Control, or the dog pound, where dogs are taken, and if they aren't adopted in a short amount of time, they are killed, basically. They're euthanized. And it doesn't matter how healthy or what a wonderful life they could have had and the joy they could have brought to someone's life. They are have to be put down to make room for the thousands and thousands. I mean, there are about 12,000 dogs and cats every year just in this one shelter. And I'm sure that's pretty normal for metropolitan areas around the country.
That's
not
a
just,
huge number, isn't it?
Yes, not just Nashville. But that is the reality of it until things change, until we change our consciousness and our laws for spaying, neutering. And so anyway, I decided I would go down to Metro Animal Control. I didn't really want to go because I didn't want the reality to actually see all the animals that I knew would probably not make it. And I went down there and pretty much said, well, which dog are you going to, you know, kill next? And they pointed to this dog, Bella. And she was literally a black lab mix with indeterminate age. She'd obviously been in a home, but they couldn't find the owner. And she had gray around the muzzle and gray and just seemed very placid. And I thought, well, she doesn't try to engage people, she probably won't get adopted. And so I will take her and put her in our system. And
yes.
It took about 3 days before she gets up in the big house with me. She just would kept staring in the kitchen, through the kitchen door. And it turns out that she has a wonderful personality that fits with my other dogs. She's not alpha at all. She's very placid. She's just a lovely, gentle, sweet creature and loves to fetch. It's true. I've never seen a dog, especially of her age, she will run and fetch and remarkable. And I found that with every dog that I've had and everyone that has come through our shelter over these years, they are all unique, they are all different, and they all deserve a chance.
Yeah. And I just wanted to touch on one of the other songs to get your thoughts, and that's Darling Kate.
All right.
Because, you know, we all felt the echo of the loss of Kate McGarrigle.
Yes.
This must have affected you very deeply because, of course, you and the McGarrigle sisters for some time now have been so close, haven't you? And you, so tell me your thoughts as you began to sketch this song.
Well, you know, and you're just sitting down with a guitar and somehow, because I had just gone through pretty recently being there at her passing in Montreal. I was actually there with the family. They had invited me up. I had wanted to get up sooner, but I had shows, and I actually didn't actually get to actually see her conscious. She had already slipped into a sort of unconsciousness when I got there. But, of course, we were all aware that she had had that long battle, you know, with cancer over 3 years, and had fought it so valiantly. And at one point, you know, you really thought she had licked it. She was so strong, and she had such a life force. And she just, at Martha's wedding, her daughter's wedding, she just looked so beautiful and strong and vibrant. And so Kate, you know. But, you know, sometimes it just comes out, and just so it's finally come. And then it really just kind of poured out of me after that. I didn't really work on it very much. I mean, part of me said, you know, Kate would have written a better song about this. She would have had a more interesting melody, and it would have been somehow, but it didn't matter because this had to be it was like my farewell letter to her.
Yeah, from the heart, absolutely. So then, as you look across the next few months, the summer and gigs and festivals,
right.
How are the next few months panning out for you? What plans do you have?
Oh, they're very busy, Bob.
They always are, though, I mean, aren't they?
So we'll be working this album pretty hard, and I'm actually looking forward to having new songs to work up. So that will be fun to go out with the guys. And I'm hoping that in August, Buddy Miller and Sean Colvin and Patty Griffin and I are going to finally do the Three Girls and Their Buddy record that we were going to do last September. So I'm hoping that that will be something that we do, and then I'll probably, after that's done, I'll go back out on the road again till the end of the year.
And I'd like to play a final track from Hard Bargain itself. So what should I play?
I think let's play the title track. This is not one I wrote. This is a lovely Ron Sexsmith song that I've had on my list of to-do songs for a while. And I think the message in it kind of sums up the album and I guess a bit of my life philosophy.